This is Doug Green, and I'm the publisher of Telecom Reseller, and this is a special podcast. Today, we're interviewing Jeff Pulver. Jeff, thank you for joining us today.
I'm grateful to be here.
Well, Jeff, you know, I have a feeling our readers and listeners are going to fall into two big categories. They're either really familiar with you and what you've done in our industry, or maybe they're just hearing about you for the first time. Now, currently, you're the executive vice president of Scrumble, you're an entrepreneur, and you're a co-founder, you were a co-founder of Vonage. So why don't we talk, first of all, a little bit about yourself. You were kind of a pioneering voice for voice. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes. In 1995, I launched the first phone network on the internet called Free World Dial-Up, and an internet with 16 million people, that project went viral, and it was 7 years before Skype.
And I understand you even had some impact in terms of rules on how we...
Yes. There were a couple of things that happened. 6 months after we launched this free phone service on the internet, 300 phone companies rebelled in March of 1996. And that gave birth to the Voice on the Net Coalition. And it was the first time ever that the FCC or any government agency saw a group of people rise up from the internet to fight something. And so we had 110 companies from around the world say no to a certain petition. And then years later, in 2003, I had a premonition that coming out of the dot-com crash and telecom crash and the effects of 9/11, that phone companies would understand and appreciate how powerful broadband could be to their future. And they might want to prevent people from having the opportunity to innovate there. So I filed a petition at the Federal Communications Commission, which got passed. I asked for regulatory clarity that voice communication that starts on the public internet for not to be regulated as telecom. And that became known as the Pulver Order. And that's why today there are many people around the world who are using apps on their computers and on their phones, where they simply click on someone's name or face and they're able to engage in real-time voice and video conversations, usually for free. And that's thanks to the passing of the Pulver Order and the adoption of that law as a communication law in many countries around the world. So I did that.
Now, fast forward to just a few weeks from now, you're going to be a keynoter at Vectors. And I understand that I think your session's title is Now is the Best Time to Be Selling UCaaS. But our podcast title today is The Golden Age of Voice. You're calling this The Golden Age of Voice. Why is this The Golden Age of Voice?
Well, yeah, I look back into media history and the golden age of the movies, golden age of television. And 20 years ago, I had envisioned with some friends what we could do if we had an IP-only network and we can deliver, create services that could be deployed. And for most people, it was just ideas on a whiteboard. And these days, we're living that fantasy. We're living the dream of end-to-end communications and the ability to seamlessly communicate from one endpoint to another to, on the fly, create services and to deploy them. And the internet now connects over 3 billion people around the world. We've never, as in human history, have ever had 3 billion people connected. We've never had the freedom to communicate end-to-end and bring the world together as one ever. And now we do. And so when I look at the evolution of communications from the first telephone call and before that, the Morse code conversations that took place, never could so many people at one time be get on the same page and communicate and connect. And so from the work that I did launching the Vine conferences and the work that I did in things like Vonage, you know, I had a vision for what broadband communications could bring us. But now we're living in the time where dreams are happening and that they're being fulfilled. And now a small company can compete with a large company in the delivery of services, that we no longer are disadvantaged because of our size. And that if, you know, you're a software developer, you know, 20 years ago, I spoke on my own stages talking about a future where it didn't matter where you live, that you can contribute to the internet economy and benefit. And we're now living in that time where you can envision a service wherever you are, as long as you're connected to the internet, and deliver it. And that to me is magical. So I associate magic with being golden and being in that light of wow. And it's really special time. And it does require perspective on where we came from. But I think that we're now living in that time where, you know, messaging in some levels, the new voice, but we're really able to connect in ways that we never could before. And for me, there's nothing more powerful than voice.
And yet concurrently, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, we seem to have, along with these sort of big advances and improvements and more accessibility for smaller companies and so on, there seems to be a common complaint. I can't talk to anybody at a company that I want to talk to. That's one big complaint. And of course, currently, you know, politically and economically, there's been massive criticism of technology giants that seem to be removing or deleting the entrepreneurial flavor that was sort of the promise of the internet.
Well, we have a few contrasting policies. You know, large companies grew up on the internet with the idea that customer support did not mean communicating directly with a customer, that, you know, they were disintermediating using a voice communication instrument to communicate. And so that's cultural, driven by companies like Facebook and Google. Very, very hard. It's one thing if you want to buy an advertisement, but if you actually need support, good luck. It's just hard, you know. And then you've had large companies in the past that used IVRs as a way to create moats, analog moats, digital moats between them and the customer. And it's really frustrating because if you're working in sales in a company, I always encourage people to publish their direct dial numbers on their business cards so people could bypass the switchboard and get directly to the customer, because you want to be able to support inbound leads. It's sort of, you know, there's a disconnect, literally, that someone who wants to buy from you has to go through a switchboard, and they're trying to protect the identity of who they're going to connect to. It makes no sense to me. And so we have cultural issues, technical issues, but in theory, we can get around all this. And for people that are afraid of giving out a phone number for that, perhaps it's retrievable in the future, one of the nice things with voice over IP is we actually can create spontaneous numbers. You know, if you look at services like Uber and many other services, you can actually have, a different number presented. Your actual number is masked, and they're using a different number for the purposes of the conversation. We can do all that. We can actually create a safe place to have communications between people and not worry about the identity of the number being shared outside the conversation. But it's cultural. You know, if enough people rebelled and stopped advertising on these major platforms, maybe management would take action. But you know, navigation of PBXs have been an age-old problem that, you know, my parents and perhaps their parents before them had problems with. And, you know, and people like to complain. It's like we make people, when they're not happy, make a lot of noise. When we're happy, we're pretty quiet. We're not really saying, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing in the world, and we shout it out. We just really, it's only when we're not happy we make the noise. And so I do think there are a lot of people who are connecting effectively, efficiently, and that the noise is what's had and will be. And it's the same test, you know, ask an executive if they can make a three-way conference call with whatever technology they have. They still are challenged today. It is hard to do easy things if you don't know how to use the instruments in front of you. It's easy if you learn them. And so it's cultural. It's more of culture today than technology. And I think that can shift, and in some companies it does, and others it's legacy. And I don't believe it's a technology issue anymore, but it's how we approach business and ultimately how you want to serve your customers. And if you're okay with your customers not being happy to reach you, that's your issue. Take it up with the customers. But at the same token, I've seen large, older companies adopt to social media and use the back channel on platforms like Twitter as a means to do amazing customer support, particularly under stressful situations. And I give them kudos for being able to do things. Like, I used to not like having to re-enter my phone number 5 times when I'm dealing with a company. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden now my phone number is recognized, and my mobile phone's now authorizing them to communicate directly and move me up the food chain. Or if I'm having trouble with a flight, I can actually direct message a service provider airline, and they rebook my flight for me. And that's magical. And so this will improve, you know, customer management will always evolve. But the idea that the larger companies are the only ones who can deploy these large services, that's gone. So the small companies have a lot of leverage, a lot of learning though. And we need to also appreciate the value of the customer. We have to appreciate their voice, and we always have to listen. You know, it's not just what we want to do, But we have to have that feedback loop and be active and listen to the voice and understand that we can be better no matter how we are. We can always provide a better technology, a better service, but it comes down to us as people. We're the ones who ultimately deploy the technology. We're the ones who create the rules for how the technology should work, I think. And so we're the ones responsible for what the experience is.
So, yeah, let's dive a little bit deeper into basically what you're now talking about is we've sort of explained some of the problems and challenges. Now I think you're talking about some of the solutions and maybe some of the opportunities on how those solutions could be sold. You're going to be speaking at the Sky Switch Vectors 2019. Your theme is now is the best time to be selling UCAS. Why is it the best time to be selling UCAS?
Well, from my perspective, when I was doing Vaughn, I was talking about the possibility of unified communications. I spoke about what we could do, and it was a lot of theoretical service creation, and the broadband internet was just happening and wasn't fully deployed. And now we don't have those limitations. Now it's really a matter of being able to identify a customer and understand what their needs are and deliver on their needs with technology that matches up one-on-one. And so for the same reason why I believe that we're in this golden age where we have, you know, a user base, if you will, addressable user base of 3 billion plus, that we never had before. So our customer base could be hyper-local or it's global. It depends upon how you want to approach the business. But you have a huge addressable market because you're not only dealing with people in your immediate area, you can talk to people anywhere. And services that we want to envision, we now can. So before, you know, if you go back, you know, to the 1960s, if you look at how a Class 5 switch functionality was first created, somebody ultimately went to an engineer at Lucent, at AT&T or Nortel, or Alcatel, and they asked for a certain feature to be created, and it was created. And then when soft switches were being built in the late 90s, unfortunately for the most part, most soft switches just replicated the most popular features of the old switches. They didn't really rethink and resolve the problems. But today we have the solutions in place that if someone has a particular need, it can be configured in particular ways. And so we're unbounded in the delivery of services. And frankly, it's a lot easier now to sell too. And we get to be competitive and we get to have leverage. I mean, there was a time that only the large phone companies could deliver certain features and functionalities. And it's my belief that everyone, more or less everyone, can. And now it's how people compete in various marketplaces and small, medium enterprises and larger ones. And it's, for me, it's fun because it's seeing the delivery of what was just once vision and words now actualized. And so it's never been a better time than now. And I think that our opportunities are just going to grow as we better understand how people need to connect and need to communicate and need to navigate to get to the right person. We can now deliver services that match to that.
So I've heard about something you called purple minutes. What are those?
Purple minutes is a phrase I came up with back in, I think, 2002, because back then a lot of the large telcos that had ordered soft switches and were now doing next generation communications were simply replacing their old switches with new switches. And I used to call the minutes that those were generating black and white minutes. And purple minutes to me represents the ability to do things never before practical or possible. And today, if you look at all the voice associated with apps from our phones and from our laptops and our desktops, we're doing things where we're adding voice to apps and to services that we never could have done before in the analog world. And so for me, most of the communication services we're seeing today, things like FaceTime and WhatsApp and Messenger, those are purple apps, and they're creating purple minutes.
So Jeff, why did you call it purple?
Well, because it was my favorite color. I sold for my sister growing up, and all my businesses, I used purple in the logo. It's just, I like the color, and I use it really as a reference to me to represent innovation, opportunity, and change. And the reality that if it's black and white, it's the way we're used to it. And I want to see something that's in technicolor, but instead of doing rainbows and unicorns, I chose purple. So it's not black and white. It's not in that scale. And so it's colorful enough to represent opportunities, which I still pursue.
So, you know, Jeff, we're sort of coming up on a brand new decade. And it's interesting in this podcast because, you know, we started out talking about the late 90s and your vision for communication and what you saw coming down the pike. What do you see coming down the pike for the next 10 years in terms of VoIP and cloud and unified communications?
I think in the next 10 years ahead, we're going to be surprised 10 years looking at this and listening to this, what happened. I do believe that as a world, we will be closer. We will be more connected, that we will appreciate the opportunity to feel through our voice and to see through our voice. I believe that, you know, as a technology provider, these platforms have become much more stable. I do not believe necessarily that the way we're communicating today will be the same way we communicate in 10 years. Nobody saw the onslaught of emojis. Nobody realized that a generation like the millennials will change the way we do punctuation. But we will always find ways to connect one soul to another. We will find ways to have meaningful, heartfelt conversations so that in the end, we're able to deliver messages that are meaningful. And the technology will continue to evolve to deliver the most effective, most meaningful way to do that, whether it's business to business, business to consumer, consumer to consumer, human to human. We are going to see a lot of machine to machine communication happen. It's going to go up geometrically, even beyond where we think. We have to deal with 10 years from now, we're going to have to be dealing with the generation of self-driving cars and the accidents they're causing and the rules to AI that we have to solve. Because in certain societies, if it's inevitable, there's going to be, God forbid, a crash. You know, some societies value the elderly. Some societies value the young. And how do you create the AI rules to figure out who's going to be, how do you minimize the damage if someone has to get hurt? Who is it going to be? And how do we communicate that? And how do we communicate beyond our solar system? You know, Vint Cerf years ago came out with an IP schema for our planets. We have so many exoplanets now, and now that the Milky Way galaxy has 100 billion stars, so we have 500 billion exoplanets. We have scaling issues. We need something beyond IP version 6, I think. And so how we communicate is going to change. Why we communicate doesn't. And the access to communication, probably that the barrier even gets down lower. And we will see, you know, I had this theory a long time ago. I used to call it the voice inside, the same way that Intel used to promote, Intel inside. But I do think that we will be able to talk to our refrigerators. We'll talk to our washing machines. We'll talk to our devices and they'll talk back to us and they'll give us information and we'll be able to, and this can be part of our, it's just going to be part of our daily life that we're going to be able to have voice added to many devices that are in our life, that are in our flow. And we're going to be able to get feedback and meaningful information that, you know, 10 years from now, we're going to be talking to the information sources rather than indirectly. So you will have, you know, directories that talk back to us. Our devices will give us the information we need. And we will spend less time trying to do that analog digital conversion and really more direct access to the information we need it as we need it. Knowledge will be more scarce and at the same time more available. We will value, we will learn to value our time. And I think, you know, the same way that Einstein appreciated that he didn't have to have everyone's phone number in his mind because it was published in a phone book, we will find ways to be more effective in how we think and how we do and how we create. And that the systems that are delivered will be a little bit more evolved than where we are today, that we will still need backup emergency support systems, that in times of disaster, radio will still matter, that we will have to have an analog component to our lives, even if we want to be completely digital, because stuff happens that we never expect, and we have to be prepared for everything. And that at the end of the day, 10 years from now, saying, hi, I love you, is just as valuable as it is today. Being able to see the person matters, being able to, you know, in some cases, if the loved one hug them or just let them know you're alive, that matters. And ultimately, 10 years from now, we're going to be living in a time of what I call digital breadcrumbs, where, you know, for the last, you know, in our own society, for the last 150 years, many people came and went, and the only people that were remembered were people that were famous and infamous. And now, you know, 10 years from now, we will have 20 years of everyone on this planet having a chance to leave behind digital breadcrumbs, perhaps that are curated by their families, and that every time you shared a status update on a platform like Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, maybe you had videos on YouTube, maybe you had articles published, news stories about you, you'll be able to create a registry, an ancestry for your family and your future family. So 150 years from now, a distant relative can actually know that you were here and connect with you in a way that we never could do before. And that they'll know that, you know, you can love someone through memories. I mean, my dad passed away 21 years ago. I still remember going to my grandfather's house and seeing a picture of my father when he was 8 years old. And I was thinking, gee, in the 1940s, it would have been cool if there was Twitter, because my father certainly would have tweeted what it was like to have his picture taken, and the photographer would have tweeted what he thought about having the picture taken. My mistake was not asking my grandfather, because he was there. And these types of memories, being able to connect and create breadcrumbs, extend digital communications and extend our life beyond our life and allow us to connect in ways that our ancestors never knew. But I believe everybody's matters. I think our voices will carry forward into the future in ways that we never thought of in the past. And I think that 10 years from now, we'll better appreciate breathing and being and the presence of our lives.
So, Jeff, you know, that, how do you connect this vision that you have over the next decade, where we're going, to the day-by-day life of a channel partner company? In this case, specifically someone who's a partner of SkySwitch. They're running around and selling white label solutions. But maybe, you know, to our broader readers, we have many people that sell different types of solutions, or they're an end user. Where does this vision fit into to their day-to-day operation?
Day-to-day, what we're living in the, you know, certainly going into 2020, is the effects of things like Moore's Law, that we're able to have devices that have much more intelligence than ever was deployed 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that small companies can, the resellers can take platforms like SkySwitch and take it as a white label solution and sell against the largest companies in the world because of the positive effects of Moore's Law, that people can offer at scale solutions, features, functionality that they couldn't do in the past. At the end of the day, in order to have that customer relationship, it's all about relationships, relationships, relationships. It's about how a reseller deals with their customers, how much care they put into that, and it becomes human again. And it becomes about how you are able to communicate effectively and deliver on the needs of the customer. And I believe that, you know, the white label solutions we're talking about have the capability to be not only competitive, but also deliver on the needs of what the customers have and will have. And that we're evolving the technology faster, at a faster pace than anyone ever imagined. So that it's, you know, you now, if doesn't matter how large your company is, you can compete against the enterprise divisions or the small business divisions of any major cable company or major telco, because you're playing with the same deck of cards. In fact, in the telcos, you're dealing with people who are less flexible than you. And you have the flexibility of listening to what customer needs and creating a custom solution if you want to. And we've never really had that before. And so this all ties into customer care and literally caring for your customer, leveraging the technology and being on the receiving end of the beneficiary of Moore's Law. And that every time, every 18 months or so, you are still seeing gains in service, gains in deliverability, and new features and functionalities, and then being able to funnel it into the needs of the end user and support them and be there for them. And so depending upon who is ultimately going to be selling this and using this, the better, you know, the better you know your customer, the better you can deliver services to them. And, you know, for me, this is a dream that's come true, and that we're able to use things like the internet and cloud-based services as a reliable deliverable platform. I can tell you back in 2001, when I told a company that was delivering effectively cloud, you know, IP-based communication services delivered to over my cable modem, They refused to. They wanted to put a direct dedicated circuit to my office. I said, why? I'm getting this cable modem service almost for free. Use it. And it was a fight for 18 months. And then all of a sudden they realized they can deliver all their services via cable modems. And they ended up saving a ton of money because their mindset was anyone who's going to be one of their customers, they want a dedicated circuit. I said, you don't need that. And, and I proved to them I was right about that. And, we're discovering new things every day, and it's just an amazing time to be. So for me, at the conference, I'm looking forward to not only speaking and giving a keynote, but catching up with friends and making new ones, and certainly there to help share a vision and connect with those who will be there.
You know, Jeff, with a sort of very powerful vision you have, I'm still tempted to ask a kind of very practical question. I know a lot of our readers, and I'm thinking especially of just a lot of regular channel companies, feel that they're under more pressure than ever. You know, it's very difficult. There's great price competition. It's very difficult to achieve any kind of margin with the services that they're selling. And, I think a lot of them feel sort of underpowered to meet the challenges that are ahead of them.
That's always been a concern ever since the days of prepaid calling cards, when some companies came in with razor thin margins on reselling minutes. And for me, it was a shift from selling minutes to selling sessions. And that what you're really doing is offering opportunities to communicate. And if a reseller really truly understands the market they're selling into, I promise you that they can actually invent a service that's unique to that customer, to that segment of customers, and you can create a custom solution that meets their needs much better than just what the basics are. And here you have the ability to be creative and deliver. Because for me, it's not so much it is price matters, but usability matters. And the creativity I give them credit for, so that if you happen to know how a certain company does their business, and you're able to provide even a small custom change to make the service be less friction, you win. It's the people who just try to do cookie cutter solutions day in and day out, who don't really care about their customers. They're the ones at risk. But if you care about your customers, if you're connecting with them, if you're creating a relationship where you get to know them, and you're calling upon them not just one time to make a sale or to resell them, to upsell them, but you actually make the effort to communicate as a human to a human, you will win. It's going to be the relationships that endure that matter. And you know you're doing well when someone leaves one company and when they go to another company, they order your service because they want you. Because we are, as long as, it's depends on how you're going to scale and sell, but for me, there is a customability, the ability to customize the solution, but you humanize the solution and be present and be available to answer questions. Don't hide behind things, but be there and take them through it and let them know that you're there to serve. If you do that, you will hold on to customers and your business will grow. And that's not a technology solution. That's just being a human.
Well, Jeff, thank you for joining me today and talking about your upcoming keynoting at Vectors 2019 and also sort of a big vision about where we've come from and where we're going in unified communications and cloud communications and so on. I want to remind all of our listeners they can find more information about the upcoming conference at vectors2019.com, and also you can visit skyswitch.com. Jeff, I'm going to look forward to seeing you at the conference.
I'm looking forward to seeing you and catching up in person. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.